Hello, and welcome to the Off the Table podcast. We are a group of global health enthusiasts from diverse backgrounds who deeply care about improving access to surgery worldwide and believe that the solutions come from the ground up. Your hosts, Amuna, Reem, Paul, and myself, Emily, will aim to create a safe environment to have comfortable and uncomfortable conversations about equitable surgery. We aim to be impactful by sending a concrete and evidence-based call to action after each conversation. We truly hope you enjoy these conversations as much as we do.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to episode 3 of the Off the Table podcast. My name is Paul. Today, I'm excited to interview Dr. Dieudonné Lamfouka, a general surgeon from the Democratic Republic of Congo, surgical educator, and advocate for the expansion of surgical care across Africa.
Welcome, Dieudonné. Thank you for coming on the podcast today.
So first off, tell us a little bit about you, where you grew up, what made you decide to become a surgeon, and what you like about this profession.
Well, thank you. As you said, I am a general surgeon, presently practicing in West Africa, in Liberia, at Elwa Hospital. And for my little background, I was born and grew up in DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo. I'm most in the west part of DRC and grew up mainly in Kinshasa, the capital city. I graduated from high school. I applied for medical school because I've been dreaming to become a doctor. That has been always my passion. And I early convinced my parents to apply for medical school. So they agreed and I applied for medical school and went to do my medical school in the southeast of DRC in Lubumbashi. Is the second university of the country, and is also where I met my wife, Christelle. We both graduated from the same school in 2011. And since then, surgery was really my passion. Each time when we have a dissection course or anatomy class, so I was so excited. So, and then I started developing interest in surgery. With time goes, each year when I'm doing my end of the year rotation in the hospital, seeing the needs of surgical care services in Africa, and I was really motivated to do surgery. And I always dream to be a part of those who seek and advocate to deliver a high quality of surgical care across Africa. So that was my passion to do surgery. So I view surgery like one of the surgical specialty where you are too closer to your patient and dear family, and also is life-saving and changing to patient life. So I feel like it's really interesting to do, to be part of that.
That's awesome. Thank you. So you did your general surgery residency in Gabon with PACS and COSECA. And for those who aren't familiar, could you tell us a little bit about each organization?
Yes. Well, indeed, I did PACS training in Gabon and also COSECA training at the same time for 5 years. So PACS stands for Pan-African Academy of Christian Surgeons. Their vision is to train Christian physicians to become surgeons that's willing to remain in Africa and to meet the needs, and also sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ by delivering high quality and standard care with compassion to those patients in most need, like those in rural area, and also those are lacking to afford them quality surgical care. So that's mostly the vision. And PACS has been implemented since almost 25 years now, and there are more than 100 graduates already. All of them are in Africa, across 25 countries now, are serving as a full-trained general surgeon. COSECA is the college of surgeon of the East, Central, and Southern Africa. So all the region of the East, Central, and Southern region. They're one of the largest surgical training program institution that's trained surgeon with safe and high quality surgical training program, and have a common curriculum and a common examination system that qualifies surgeon to practice on all different country across the region and with a high standard of care. Yeah, so that's a little bit what I can talk about. The two organizations, and both have a fellowship level of training. That means 5 years training program in the various surgical specialty and subspecialty, like general surgery, pediatric surgery, orthopedic, ENT, neurosurgery, and so on. So those are the specialty and subspecialty that COSECA and PACS both together as a organization try to implement in Africa.
All right, that's great. Could you speak a little bit to the importance and significance of the longstanding partnership that exists between them? Does it allow, enhanced training or enhanced surgical capacity, or does it allow them to reach a larger area, do you think, as well?
Yeah, I think so, indeed. I think both programs have similar vision. They are all providing to Africa a stream of well-trained and qualified surgeons to provide a safe and affordable surgical care. So that's, I think, the two partnership is wanted, and they have developed almost a similar curriculum that's all trainees are going through the same requirement, through the same examination process, like having the OSCE-TAP examination for membership and having clinical exam and also a VIVA exam for the fellowship level, so that all are equal and have the same opportunity to be trained and have the same level of skill to provide the need in Africa. So, yeah.
Hey, in your experience, as being a COSEXA and PACS trained surgeon, how did you find the partnership in your experience? Did you find the partnership between the two organizations equitable? And how would you envision equitable educational partnership should look in your mind?
Yes, well, I'll give a little bit story, like for my story, becoming a surgeon. I dreamed to be a surgeon, but I didn't have funds or money to pay myself to get specialized. For most of African countries, they have very little training program where they have scholarship. And then if they have scholarship, maybe for like DRC, where you have more than 80 million population, almost close to 90, and then you can imagine the number of doctors are producing every year, and then have a spot of like five, not more than 10 by each specialty to apply for residency. So, which is mean it's very difficult to get a chance, and that's not equal and not equitable. For somebody who doesn't have money to pay for training, then cannot apply and then can remain a generalist for years. And then his dream just remain like that. And for the two organizations, I think they are having the approach of having equitable opportunity where somebody who do not have fund but is qualified, have competency to do a surgical residency that can apply and go through interview and have the same opportunity that those who have finances to apply and become a surgeon. So I had that opportunity to get a scholarship from PACS and did my training successfully over the past 5 years. And at the same time, I applied for COSEXA, did the 5 years as well with COSEXA and get my certification as well in 2019 with PACS and COSEXA. So that's give me a chance. Like if I didn't have this opportunity, I could have not maybe be here talking about this podcast. So I think both organizations have that vision of having equity. For me, when we talk about equitable education opportunity, that we have to think about all students or all those who are going to residency to have the same chance, the same opportunity, the same resources. Like no one will feel like, oh, it's been unfair to me or it's been fair to other ones. So all of you, you have the same exam model. So you do your exam with the same examiner, the same process. So nobody will feel like it was not fair to go to the exam. So all of you have the same opportunity. So that's for me be equitable. And also we have the same environment of learning. We have books, we have library. So everybody having access to the material that he needs so that he can optimize and have a scaffolding result at the end of his training. So I think that's why I view being equitable educational system or approach.
Thank you. So now, as you mentioned, you now work as a general surgeon at Elwa Hospital in Liberia as one of the very few fully trained surgeons in the country. Could you speak to some of the challenges you face as being one of fewer than fully 20 fully trained surgeons in a country of more than 5 million people?
Yes, well, the challenges are a lot. As you can look at the statistic, having just over 20 surgeons for that such of population is very, really, really overwhelming. And sometimes you do see like the surgeon ratio with the population doesn't match. So the need is really unmet. And most of the hospital do not have access to surgical care, or they don't have surgeons that are full trained to provide safe and quality surgical care. So that makes that we are really busy all the time and we get overwhelmed at times, and the risk of getting burnout can be higher, and it give a lot of stress. And then at the end, you may look at yourself being almost like, I would say, a jack of all trades. So you have to do everything. Like just recent, before we start our podcast, I was doing an orthopedic surgery, doing an intramedullary nail for a patient who have trauma and has a femur fracture and tibia fracture. So we have to do ortho surgery where we have only maybe two orthopedic surgeons for all country. So that is not enough. So you have to do ortho, you have to do pediatric surgery, you have to do a little bit of plastic surgery. So you're kind of everywhere. That gives you a lot of stress and challenge, and also resources that you need to have so that you can implement what you need for such of care for those patients that are coming for you. So that's few of challenge I can express. And there are also some technical issues that we face, also like continuing medical education, and you are there, so you need to improve also yourself to be in continuing medical education so that you can upgrade yourself and give good quality of care to your patients. So those are a couple of challenges I can list, that there are many amongst the challenges.
You're also an educator as well, training physicians that come through in surgical skills. For me, I'm amazed that you must be already unbelievably busy as just a surgeon. How do you find time to also train, I'm assuming, an incoming rotation that just constantly different people, new surgeons or new physicians coming through learning surgical skills? How do you find time to balance that? And are there any additional challenges with that?
Well, this for me is indeed is a very difficult task to do, because for me, passing the knowledge to the other generation, that's a very huge challenge, because they've been invested on you and now you have to pass on, and it's huge. And I try a little bit to implement the system in the way I was training residency. I know surgical training is very demanding and very difficult. You have always to be in the hospital, and the family medicine might be a little bit different, but each time they rotate in surgery, they feel, oh, it's so tough, it's so difficult, because we try to put them on a rhythm. Like at the end of their rotation, at least they can go with the skill and knowledge that will help them at least to take care of about the essential surgical procedure that they can be able to do as an emergency where they'll end up being. Because most of them will maybe not be in the capital city, maybe in the rural area where there is no surgeon and patients need an emergency surgery. So they should be able at least to save patient life until they find a way to refer the patient to the big hospital. So that's a big challenge. And I try to implement a schedule where days are less busy, so that we have academic session where we have conference. We give them topics to present and then discuss with them. And we have also hands-on on rounds, discussing case by case, and also in the operating room. So it's not easy. So that's why it takes us time. And sometimes my family do complain that I don't have much time with them. So it's very challenged to have that such of responsibility. But I enjoy it more and love it, because that's my passion, educating and teaching. I love it. So I have good time with resident and intern, and giving them what I have received a little bit, so that they can be able to be helpful for the surgeon and also for the people around, so that they can save lives. So that's how I do it.
Great. And then, so along a similar vein, in terms of surgical education, it was recently announced that Elwha Hospital is hoping to become a PACS training site with a full surgical residency program. And I believe you're heavily involved with that. So what needs to be done in your mind in order to see this project to completion? You know, how will Elwha Hospital become a PACS, full PACS training site for surgery residency?
So the idea of having a surgical training program here with PACS was when I first get here in 2019, my first 6 months, I see the needs of the surgical care and the lack of the qualified surgeon. That prompted me to have that idea, and seeing interns rotating, seeing their level and the surgical skill and knowledge, I feel, well, this would be a good idea to have a surgical training program. But having a training like PACS here will require a lot. So I've been discussing with my hospital in the past year or so to see how we can adjust. So that will require a lot of adjustment, because PACS is really requiring standards and very rigorous on the training. And I think we need to make a lot of adjustment in terms of infrastructure. That's PACS will require to have a good space, a surgical clinic department where residents will have the office to see patients and faculty will be there for supervision, and we need a library like for education building for teaching session. And we need housing for residents. We would like them to be permanent and close to the hospital so that they can be able to attend the operating room or the emergency room at a time fashion. So I think this will require a lot of spacing, adjustment, and discussion with the administration to make them understand this vision and to implement the change so that this can be accommodated so that the PACS program can be implemented here. Yeah.
So still lots to do, but it's, I mean, I think it's an extremely worthy goal, and I think could help expand the surgical care throughout not just Liberia, but all over, all over Africa extremely well. So as a PACS graduate, this must hold special personal significance for you. What does the expansion of PACS mean to you personally?
Yeah, well, first I'll say for us to have this such of program, I'll get back a little bit. This may take us a couple of years, like 2 to 3 years to have a such training program. And some places have been even delayed and go up to 5 years to develop a program because the requirements are really huge. So for me, PACS is unique to me. And I'll say also unique for Africa because I'm always thinking how to get specialized. And you have such opportunity to get trained and become a surgeon, not just a surgeon, but also a leader. Like now, just after a year after graduation, I'm education coordinator from the surgical department, and I'm involved on the family medicine training and also in the final exam for the membership exam, so on the surgical part. So that's requiring a lot. That shows that how much PACS has been put on me, not only on the surgical side, but also in the level of leadership and knowledge and education. So I think PACS give a lot. And I can say this is a really example of an equity where coming from background where my family does not have enough money to send me to do specialization or subspecialty, but I had this opportunity without I pay my dedication, but I didn't pay money to get trained. So PACS funded my scholarship, and this is really a good example of equity where people should have opportunity, same chance, so that's to see improve and expand the need of the surgical care. So that's why I see PACS for me. It means a lot and it means all for me.
I appreciate you bringing that back to equity there again. So changing topics a little bit, you recently published a paper reviewing the disparity between the surgeries that were identified as plastic surgery cases versus cases that could be realistically handled by a plastic surgeon at Bungalow Hospital in Gabon, basically identifying the need for more plastic surgeons in sub-Saharan Africa. How do you believe this void may be filled? Does PACS currently have any training programs for plastic surgeons?
Well, yes, the need is very huge and still unmet. And PACS is trying to launch a plastic surgery program fellowship, which probably by 2022, but is still in the pipeline. This will be just a little bit of it, but there is a lot to do. There is existing action that already been in the past, like mission trip organization doing to fill the void. But for me, I feel like there should be like implement or have an approach to help the surgeon or the physician on the grounds to have them have some basic skill in plastic surgery. Meanwhile, to help on those cases are coming, like somebody who would need some plastic surgery. Surgery can be affordable. So also to have some short training program that will help surgeon or general surgeon to be able to do some reconstruction, like doing flap, some rotational flap, doing some muscle flap. Those are the things can be implemented, courses, classes, and training conference to help physician, young medical doctors or surgeon to be able to get some skill in plastic surgery. And to a long extent or big extent, if possible, to even develop formal surgical training for plastic surgery residency in Africa or abroad so that African can train and get commit to return back to their home country or to the one of the African countries to give back what they have been received as training in the part of the surgical training. So that's what I see to help and add on the void for the plastic surgery needs. Yeah.
So in that article, you discussed plastic surgery in the context of global surgery. So a bit of a broader question, what does global surgery mean to you?
Yeah, this is interesting. ISV global surgery for me is it should be like a surgical services that are integral, that are committed to give a care, to consider a patient as a whole, not just one group of people or just a category of people, just should consider all the population, should be considered as an integral commitment to deliver an affordable and safe surgical care across all the population in the country. Either living in the low resources setting in a rural area or living in the urban, we should be able to have an equal and affordable surgical care at the same standard, not just people living in the city where they can get affordable surgery. So I view global surgery in that way, to be global, delivering a quality of surgical care to all population equitable. And having resources also for those low resource setting to have equipped them and train the doctor so that they can be able to optimize their level of care and give a good quality of care, even being in the rural area, and make the place more attractive. So that's why I really decided to have this topic, so that to see what will be the impact of a plastic surgeon in a such environment. Is it worth it to also have a plastic surgeon in a rural environment? Yes, indeed, because the same problem or the same condition that plastic surgeon can deal in the urban area can be found also in the rural setting, specifically like burns, contracture scars. Those are very devastating and difficult. Some people even living with it without having care, like those who are born with cleft lip and palate, they do not have funds. They are poor, living in the rural area. How can they get accessible to a plastic surgeon to get their cleft lip and palate repair? So, I mean, like, I think that was my idea, to look the broad view of the need of plastic surgeon globally as a global surgeon.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, that's something we've been asking a lot of our guests, kind of what does global surgery mean to them? So it's been interesting getting all the different answers. So I appreciate that. Thank you. In your webinar from last October, you really highlighted some important issues about surgical care across Africa, but two, some really fascinating cases. And I won't steal your thunder, but just some really, really amazing thing. We'll post the link in the show notes if you're comfortable with it. Sure. And I would recommend anyone who's listening to go watch it, because it really is incredible. But in that webinar, you mentioned that most of the surgical workforce in Africa is focused in urban areas. What do you believe can be done to get more surgeons to practice in rural areas, or to provide surgical care to these rural areas where there is a lack of surgeons?
Yes, I think he will require a lot for us to change this tendency. I think we have a couple of ideas to develop. Like, we need to develop infrastructure in the low and the rural area, like having a good resource setting where the hospital are well equipped, and also to be more attractive to doctors or those who are just young graduated or surgeon, to make them comfortable, like thinking not only for themselves, but also their family, like developing a good education system where they can be there and their kids can get educated, have good school, and have paid them well, give them advantage of like continuing medical education, have them opportunity to go for short training class where they will come back and implement those or where they are working, and make it more attractive in such, like, they can be well-equipped hospital, well-developed, like buildings, housing, where you can have the same accommodation that if you will be in the capital city or in the town, in the city, so that people can be more attractive. And because most of the people in the city, they are more lucrative. That is right, it's not bad. But also, if we think of the people living in the rural area, if we make our setting to be more improved, get equipment, or some of the surgeons may not have equipment in the rural area, so they'll prefer to be in the places where they can have shipment, they can have equipment easily, where a visitor also from other country can come easily. So that's maybe to increase also some partnership with other big institution organization where they can make trip to visit and encourage those who are working in the rural area, work along with them, like campaign and like a trip, so that they can be motivated to remain in that area. So that's how I view things and give idea to develop it. Yeah.
And then along a similar vein, if you had to choose one actionable item with a clear bound time target, something that could advance surgical care, not just in Liberia, but Africa as a whole, what would it be for you?
Yeah, I think Africa needs more trained and qualified physicians. So I think if there are such a surgical training program developed across Africa, that will be one of the relief to meet the huge need that Africa is lacking in terms of safe and high quality and standard surgical care. I think developing a training program for training surgeons, such PACs or COSECs or other, will be really good. And also upgrading and developing infrastructure will be another area to invest in a timely fashion, build institution or build facility where you have training program and also you have doctors are trained to work and practice after they graduate at the same institution. So Africa lack institution like that. Many places, like I will see, they have institution, but they don't have training program. So if we have at the same time, the facility that can provide training program and also can be set for those who are graduated to practice, that will be a step forward to improve and avoid the needs in the surgical care in Africa. So that will be idea to develop in future for me.
Awesome, thank you so much. First of all, just want to thank you for your time. And before you go, who would you recommend we host next on our podcast?
Well, it would be nice, one of my mentor. I would like you to hear from him first, because I do also like plastic surgery. I've been working with him in the past, before I graduate. He's Dr. Andrew Wang. He's a plastic surgeon. He worked in Africa for the past like 2 years. You know a little bit about the low resources setting, what it means. Like you don't have nothing. Like we wrote the article together with him. So the plastic surgery article with him. So he know what it means being in a bushy hospital where you are a plastic surgeon. You don't have no appropriate tools to do or to perform your plastic surgery, but yet you still perform some fantastic job doing flaps, doing some good plastic surgery, like some breast reconstructive surgery in the bush. I was really amazed to see such a surgery. So I think I will recommend for you to host him and hear his prospective view as well. He's now in Australia, but I think we can connect and give you his contact so that you can host him for the next podcast. So to hear also what he think about surgical care in Africa or across the globe.
That'd be awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you again, Didonet. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate you, Paul, and all the entire team of the podcast for hosting me. It's really a pleasure for me and an honor. And I'm really glad to be here. Yeah, thanks.
Thanks. And best of luck with the training program.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Off the Table, a global surgery podcast. Make sure to follow us on your favorite podcasting app and leave us a review. You can also find show notes and more information about past and future episodes on our website, www.patreon.com/offthetablepodcast. If you have comments or suggestions, you can email us at offthetablepod21@gmail.com or connect with us on Instagram, OTT_globalsurgery, and Twitter, @offthetable_pod. We hope that you join us on our next episode.